Hey, it's Chris. Welcome to the Between Dreams podcast. This is a show that gives you tools and motivation to get out there and make things happen. We've all got big ideas and dreams, and while these dreams are important, the only thing that matters is what you do. Between Dreams. Excited to bring our guest today, Isaac Dietz, who created an amazing community of filmmakers, actors, and people who are getting out there and making things happen here in Atlanta. I got linked up with him relatively quickly after I came here, and he opened up a world of opportunities, friendships, collaborations, and a lot of really amazing things, and we talk about why he does all of that. And I think it'll be really relevant to anyone who is creating things or wants to get into creating things. So it's going to be amazing. We'll jump into that in a second. But I wanted to let you know, if you are in Atlanta, we are doing a Between Dreams Sessions live show on January 24th. If you're hearing this when it comes out, you'll be able to check out the show at the Masquerade January 24th. And if you're listening to this sometime after January 24th, you can always go to BetweenDreamsSessions.com to check out the latest content that we're creating and when the next live show is happening that you can grab a ticket. So let's get into the show. This is part one of my conversation with Isaac Dietz. There's been a lot of second-time guests lately because I ran out of friends to ask to be on the podcast. But now I have new friends.
Hey, there you go.
So there's first-time guests. Like today, this is Isaac Dietz, filmmaker, writer, director, producer.
Yep.
A little bit of everything.
Yeah.
Making things. And what I particularly wanted to address and dig into a little bit today is not only are you making those things, but you're building communities and telling great stories that bring people together
right.
In more than just make this video. I'm going to speak in simplified terms a lot so that it's relevant to other people.
Sure.
They say, I'm going to make this thing and then I'm going to hope that it connects with people. And then everyone's surprised when they make this thing and it lands on a flat nothing
right.
Because there's no community to provide it for and there's nothing built. And we'll dig into a little bit of what you've done here in Atlanta with your whole world that you've created. And that's how I got involved with your world of making videos for some of your events. You decided to first help a lot of other people and build like a community of people and make events and dedicate a lot of your personal time to helping other people and building that world around a thing that really focuses on other people, where you could have just selfishly been like, I'm going to go make my own videos. I'm going to go do more gigs. I'm going to do more of my own stuff that's going to benefit myself. You made it, there was somewhere when you made a decision to be like, okay, I'm going to sacrifice some of the things that might actually benefit me personally to help other people.
I should explain the Thunderdome a little bit because usually it's like out of context. It's like the Thunderdome. What is that? So the Thunderdome, as you know, is a house that I live in that is an artist residency for filmmakers where people could grow and cultivate their craft. I started in 2010, I moved to Atlanta right before the film boom. So I feel like I caught that wave of like kind of establishing myself before it like kind of blew up, which was kind of like, if it was a chess game, I mean, I wasn't doing this intentionally, but it happened to like I moved the right piece and happened to move here. So I started.
What made you move without knowing that there was a film thing happening here? Huh?
So it was like a corporate guy that needed an editor, and he saw my stuff online and was like, hey, if you move to Atlanta, I will hire you as an editor. So I moved here and started doing Chick-fil-A videos like pretty much right away. It's funny because he ended up living in Alpharetta. So when I found a place in Atlanta, he's like, yeah, here's the office, and it's like an hour away. And I'm like... That's what I've learned is in Atlanta, everyone lives in Atlanta as long as you live in Georgia. But anyway, I started the house 2010. I've been touring with bands since I was like 16, working with them since I was like 14, doing live videos and merch and stuff like that. And I saw how musicians did community and how much filmmakers lacked that. So like musicians, I saw like a band of four people would get a house together, a 5-bedroom house, and then their fifth bedroom would be for practicing and playing music. And then it's like, hey, you play bass, I play drums, I'm going to practice. Do you want to practice with me? And it's like, they just churn out like where they're getting so good at their craft because, well, if you're an accountant and I'm the bass player and I'm like, hey, I'm going to go practice bass. And it's like, not right now. Yeah. But if everyone in the same house is at the same goals, then that would be cool. And so I was thinking about that for a while. And then the idea of like, well, what if I got four filmmakers in a house and there's a fifth room that we could use for a studio for if I wanted to do a stop motion animation, which could take like a whole month. Like I could leave things set up and people actually have an understanding of what a stop motion is and how it works.
Yeah.
So I started that 2010, and then just over time, just people would move in from all over the country and just start working on their craft. And it was cool because, you know, people would share gear so much. It'd be like, oh, I have a camera, you have the lights. Could I borrow your lights? Or, hey, I got this new camera that I'm renting and I have an extra day. Do you mind if I film you just to practice it? And because there's this mutual goal, everyone was like kind of growing. So it might appear like it's like I'm taking a break from helping myself out. But in the end, it helped me out like immensely. Every yeah. time I've helped out other filmmakers, I mean, what is producing but networking and knowing people and knowing people and where their gifts are and where their craft is. And if you could teach somebody to actually like do film the way they would do like on their own, it's like really cool to see like who they are as an individual. So then when you need somebody that fills that role, like, hey, I need a DP. I know your stuff. I've seen your stuff. I know, oh, your style will fit this film that I need.
Yeah.
And so like, if I only saw your stuff, if it was only corporate or only stuff you showed me that I wasn't connected or had no relationship with the project, I wouldn't know how much of it was you and how much of it was me, how much of it was the other people in the room. But if I'm helping you with your project, do your project well, I will know where you start and where you stop. And then I'll know also where this person starts and stops and how this could be a really good symbiotic relationship in film. So I do think it's helped me out immensely. I mean, yeah. I made a feature film for $25,000 and everyone was like on board to help, and I paid them, but not like super well. And everyone's like, yeah, totally. Like, so in a million ways, it's yeah. been like tenfold helped me. So yeah.
Yeah. And that's, I was obviously playing a little bit of the other side of
yeah,
that, to
sure,
knowing
yeah.
that, you know, it's like anyone who's been doing creative type stuff for more than a yeah. few months knows that like being selfish mm-hmm. and being like, no, I'm going to hide the way that I do this. And you said something at the one of the events recently, how you were, you know, talking to another filmmaker or something, or you heard somebody saying like, oh, that looks cool. That look is cool. What lens is that on? And you're like, no, that's my look. I'm not going to help you. And
yeah.
that's such a turnoff because like.
And just for clarity, they didn't tell me the name of the lens. That's all I was asking for. Not
right.
like, could I borrow it? Could I have it? It
yeah,
was
yeah.
like, what lens was that? Because that's a look that I'm trying to go for. And they said, sorry, it took me a while to discover what lens this was. So I'm not going to share that.
Yeah.
And that's like kind of like, okay, I don't know if I want to create with you because you have this like, what's the opposite of the abundance mindset?
Oh, like lack.
Yeah. Yeah. I know there's a term for it. You know.
You guys know.
I'm lacking words for the thing that means to lack. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but where does that... So, I've sometimes battled that because I'll, like, make something or come up with an idea and then I'll see somebody else, like, doing a similar thing. So, where... How do you battle that when I'm like, I've literally had the same thing of like other people do the same thing. Like, oh, that's cool. What lens is that? What camera
yeah.
is that? And then I see they go buy it. And then like the videos, I'm like, oh, wow, that looks like one of my videos or mm-hmm. something. Or like, I don't know. It's like happened a couple times.
Sure.
And
totally.
Even like when I've done video, I've like pitched ideas to brands.
Mm-hmm.
And then I like see that they use somebody else. And it was like, but it was like my idea.
right. like a small Instagram post or something. I like hit them up, like, hey, we should do this. This is a really good idea.
Yep.
And they're like, oh, no, we have our own in-house team. And then like 4 months later, I'm like, wait, that's my video.
Right. Totally.
Which is, you know, my fault for giving it to them. But also then I was like, okay, but then I was like, balance that of like, okay, well, that doesn't affect me in any way.
Right.
I could still go make a better, like my version of that video. That it's like, but yeah. I think a lot of people fall into that mindset of lack. Mm-hmm. That's what we're going to call it now.
I'm going to think about it on the way home.
We'll go in and put that word back
yes,
in.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. We'll just cover our mouths so you could like edit it in.
But most people are in that mindset of if I don't get this thing right now, if I don't capitalize on this thing right now, somebody else is, and I'm going to lose that. Is there a trick or tip or anything that you have to stay out of that mindset?
I kind of have this like theory that I'm going to try and work out externally right now. But so like think about the idea of like a pie mm-hmm. that you like make apple pie or whatever. So there was somebody that came up with the idea of a pie.
Yeah.
Which is like to put things inside of a crust. So that person created the idea of a pie. Somebody said, what if we put apples in it? So that person created the apple pie. And another person says, what if we put pumpkin in it? And the other person says, what if we put raw or like egg and spinach and like quiche? So the person that created the pie is very creative. The person that created the apple pie, creative, but like on a different kind of level.
Yeah.
Then there's somebody that creates like grandmother's apple pie, which your grandmother makes a certain apple pie. And then McDonald's makes an apple pie. So now you have a deviation from the apple pie even. So you have a deviation, tons of deviations from pie, a pie, and then a ton of deviations from apple pie, and then my version of my grandmother's apple pie. And it keeps going like that. And so as an artist, you might be creating a formula where it's like, I use this lens with this flare to land on this effect with this color grade, and somebody will copy it. As soon as they could actually quantify it or at least articulate what mm-hmm. you're contributing, soon as they can, they could copy it. And I think once you create something, it's no longer yours. You created the thing, mm-hmm. but people are going to deviate from it. And in fact, if your ideas are any good, they will copy it. Mm-hmm. There's a really good Vimeo video, I think it's on YouTube as well, called Everything Was a Remix. And it talks about how like the Wright brothers were the first people to film the plane taking off. There's actually people all over the world like creating planes. And then there's this weird collective consciousness of we're all learning something, and we all learned what sand does and how that makes glass, and somebody's learning what steel does. And then we now have glasses because of everyone learning what things are and what they aren't and adding this truth. And then we add to it and deviate from it, and it continues to deviate if you're doing something right. If you're not contributing anything new, then I feel like you're not actually, it's not a deviation. It's just, that's just grandma's apple pie. That's not even your version of grandma's apple pie. So,
yeah.
And I think that that's where it's like, I don't know if you're a creator, if you're totally just ripped off somebody's formula.
Right.
But I don't think there's anything wrong with looking at somebody's formula and then adding your twist on it.
Yeah.
You know, that's where hip hop and punk rock and all these things are, is they just deviations from something else.
Yeah.
And I think there's something really cool about that.
Yeah. And if I'm going to double down on it, it's like really nice for you to say that right now in this setting of like dropping wisdom. But then it's like when it happens to you,
oh, it's
and
tough.
Then you're just like, oh yeah, but I know it's that tough. I'm not supposed to be mad about this or whatever, but I also don't like it.
Oh, absolutely. And that's really tough. So I'm sure you know this, like you're a funny guy. You've been in a room where you said a joke not as loud to somebody else, and then they go ahead and say that joke immediately after to the whole crowd.
Yeah.
Have you had that? And it's just like, dude, like I just said that to you. Like, are you, and they're not like giving you a credit or a nod or anything. Or like, he's going to kill me. My brother, who you know, Like when we were kids, like when we were like 16, 17, I would come up with some jokes and then I would go tell people and just say a joke or two or say, you know, and I would meet a girl and I would like say the joke and she's like, oh, your brother already said that. Like, what? But like there is something. If you tell a good joke, people are going to want to double down on it.
Yeah.
Because it resonated with them. In fact, that's a good litmus test to whether or not you said something interesting in the first place or funny in regards to a joke. Usually if I say a good joke, people go, yes, and then they add to that joke. And that's what's so cool about it. And I'm sure you've experienced that. It's like basically you created a formula or a situation that we're all going to hypothetically run with. Like, wouldn't it be funny if this happened? And then somebody's like, oh, yeah, and this. And that's when you actually know you resonated with somebody. And so they're going to grab onto that and going to deviate and then add their own twist onto that. And that's how, like, this is how science progresses, is people go, I invented this, and then, oh, or I discovered this, and oh, with that discovery, I also discovered this. Technology advances like this. And what's funny is art, we like actually try and hoard it where it's like, you know what? Picasso made his thing. He painted this way. And now people are going to copy that, sometimes actually directly, like cover songs. You want, if your song is good enough, people are going to want to cover it. And you should be like kind of honored by that. They're like, wow, somebody's covering my thing. That's really cool. I was making stuff when I was like 14 that some filmmaker kids in my area were actually like replicating their own version, which was really honoring to me. It was like really cool to see that. And so, but it is frustrating sometimes.
Yeah.
It is hard to like navigate because when you see something where it's like, you didn't even twist that to be your own. That's where it's kind of like, you saw that I'm not taking money for this and you just grabbed this completely. And then you just didn't even twist it or change it. You just word for word changed it and or just said it out loud, you know. And that's where it gets kind of frustrating.
Yeah, I think I'm just thinking back into my performing days. And there was some performers who I know would like not post their dates anywhere because like they were afraid someone was going to go like try to book that gig the next year or something.
They wouldn't post like, so, like where they were performing.
Yeah, or like post any like photos from. There was like a couple performers in like the variety world who would be like, it was very obvious, like you couldn't ever find out when they, even some of their public performances, like they were hiding those because they didn't want other variety acts to go like, oh, they work at this resort, I'm going to go hit up this resort and try to get booked there.
Oof.
And it's like, you understand this. That's why I was digging into you to like make you elaborate on that. Because you understand that too. Like, yeah, if you got a sweet gig, like you don't want a bunch of other jugglers coming and stealing it.
Totally, yeah.
But also, like, you probably stole that gig from somebody else that you saw, like, that did
right.
it. Like, an old-timer that you saw doing it. And then I started thinking while you were talking about that was, like, Penn and Teller are, like, the most visible magicians out there.
Sure.
And it's like every magician goes to their show. And then, like, there's some magicians who go to that show to try to, like, see what tricks they're doing so that they could go, like, do them in their own show. And it happens. And they have a policy that as soon as they find out that somebody anywhere in the world started doing a trick that looks like, sometimes they'll, if it's one of their, like, really core, like, things that is, like, them,
yeah.
they'll fight it. But for the most part, like if somebody else starts ripping it off, they're like, okay, now we need to change it and we need to make it better or
right.
come up with a new trick. Because now if other people are able to just come watch us do it and then redo it,
right?
Like we're not special anymore.
Yes.
So we need to get to the point. And then, so that is a really interesting thing because it leads to not limited, lacking anything. It leads to progress and that you're building upon, okay, somebody was able to just figure this out and recreate it, whether that's a magic trick or booking a juggling gig or
right.
making getting the look from a lens.
Right.
Okay, now someone stole this
sure.
from me. now I have to go do something even more innovative, more creative, mm-hmm. more whatever, mm-hmm. so that I can, and it comes back to almost a competitive thing, but not, it doesn't need to be competitive. Like, yeah. oh, now I need to go innovate and make something even more me.
Totally.
And then they're going to steal that. And then I'm going to, and I think that's where things start to push. And I think as I find as I get older, I'm like, I can just do whatever I want, whatever I like, this look that I like. Like,
yes.
I'm making juggling videos where I'm like, every shot is directly into the sun, and it's like
beautiful,
blazed down. Like,
now.
And it's like a film school. I would fail all my film school assignments because they're like, right. no, you can't but just overexpose every shot to the point where we can't see it.
Right.
But I was like, but I don't, I'm not in film school and I can do whatever
exactly.
I want. And then, so it's like pushing that where I can just be like, I can do whatever I want. Leads to like, oh, this look is cool. Then people start to ask me like, how did you do that? And then it's like, oh, now it's that thing. And now it's like, I think everything, it's like people ask me about this, the podcast, like,
yeah,
what, how do you do this? It's in your living room. How did you,
right.
why is the lights there? Why is this?
Sure,
why is
sure.
that? What camera is that? What thing is this? And it's the same thing. Like I could tell them, I could put out the list of gear.
Right.
And then they're going to go make a podcast.
Right.
And they're like, I didn't invent this.
Yeah.
I like figured out a somewhat elaborate way for me to do it.
Right.
And then, but it's never going to, and then what you said the other day was like, you could have the same script, same crew, everything.
Yep. Totally.
Two people are going to make a different movie, because of that. And that's the same as it all.
The one thing I want to, or unless you had something, I think it comes down to the goal.
Hmm.
What's your goal?
Yeah.
And so, for example, let's say your goal is to make the world a better place, and you've created a thing that does that. Mm-hmm. Let's say you're Gandhi. Let's say you're Mother Teresa, okay? You would want people to steal from you. If
yeah.
you think what you're doing mm-hmm. is making the world a better place, then like Thunderdome, steal that idea.
Yeah,
I think it's worked great for me. I love it. It's been really fulfilling. And I've actually had some Thunderdomer move on to make their own house where they have all their filmmakers live together. So, like, that's great. It's made my life better. And if it's going to make your life better, if this is in your vibe, if this is your wheelhouse, then go do it. If my goal is money or fame or credit, there's a saying or the quote that says, you could do anything if you don't care who gets the credit. Mm-hmm. And then Tupac said, I might not change the world, but I might spark the mind that does. Mm-hmm. And if you put those two together and go, I might not get credit for changing the world, but I might be the person that sparks the mind that does. There might be something I'm doing that's helping other people out, but somebody else steals it and has a better PR than I do or cares about PR a little bit more than I do. And this is honestly what happens to artists all the time. The ones that are the most creative and avant-garde and experimental go and they make some really weird stuff. Then somebody that knows how to tone that down for a general audience will, and then they do it. And then it's now out there. Leonard Cohen, Hallelujah, is a good example of that. He's, general audiences don't care for Leonard Cohen. He's very like finger picky and dark and just sounds like he's just sad. Eeyore plays music, basically. I love him. But somebody like Jeff Buckley comes in and says, oh, I know where he's going with this. This is a beautiful song. And I'm going to dumb it down for the general audience
yeah.
and kind of make it so everyone could have it. So I think it comes down to your goal. And I think that if you're doing something that actually is making the world a better place, or if that's your goal, then I don't think, like if the Wright brothers' goal was to be able to fly to, you know, New York anytime they wanted to for the holidays, then they would want other people to make planes.
Right.
If they were wanting to be the only people to fly and the only people flying to New York, then they would probably hoard the information.
Mm.
So what's your goal? Do you want to be able to watch good films? Do I want to watch good films that look good and that are unique and original? I actually don't want to teach you the formula on how to use a certain lens. I want to teach you the formula of how to be genuinely yourself as an artist. And the more I could do that, the more I won't watch all this like regurgitated garbage that's just formulas just like, oh, this is the formula for a rom-com. This is the formula for an action movie. This is the formula for this, where there's no like human interaction with it. There's no relationship with the artist to the thing. It's these committee films that are being made, and there's no exploration of the human self, because I experience art and consume art to learn more about humanity and myself. And if somebody's being true, then I'm actually going to go, I see myself in them in their failures, and then I see myself in them in their successes as well. And that's what makes me feel more alive as a human. And I want more artists to do that. I would love for all of the artists to be able to do that more, because it's just going to make my life more enjoyable, more fulfilling. And I'm going to, sorry, I rant a lot.
Yeah, that's great. Piggybacking on that, that like encouragement, there's a overall vibe and feeling that in the things that you're doing, and especially what you were just saying now, is encouragement of others, building people up rather than hoarding and limiting people. Where and at your place when people come to show their films, you have this atmosphere where people aren't afraid to, most of the world it's I want to make this thing, but I don't think it's gonna be good enough.
Right.
And because the world, especially on the internet, when you post something that has any tiny bit of something wrong with it, people will tell you about it.
Oh, absolutely.
So that encourages people to not do stuff. It encourages people's doubt, and it magnifies their doubt because they keep hearing about it. When people show the films at your place, there's a whole room full of people who are encouraging the good things, and you're finding the good things.
Yeah.
And I'm going to double down and keep challenging you on this, because in a podcast, it's easy to say, yeah, encourage people. But then when you see somebody's film, you're like, all right, you didn't do this right. Buy a microphone.
Right.
Because your audio sounds terrible. Like, stop shaking the camera. You know, there's like things where you could very easily be like, all right, yeah, I appreciate that you're trying, but let's try harder. And that feeling never happens at your places or your things. And it, like, for me, sometimes I'm like, yeah, I want, like, deep down, I want to be encouraging, but there's this, like, maybe it's this, like, because I'm on the internet too much, where I'm but I can tell them that their audio sucks.
Right.
Or something. But that never happens. There, like, no, from anyone,
which is cool.
It's like super cool,
and
so we'll go back down into the community building aspect of that. How does that happen, where there's not one person there that makes people feel like feel bad about the mistake, or not even mistake, but the process that they're in? And then maybe for you as a person, how do you, because it's got to come up sometimes when you're watching, again, we're not like, I don't want to be like digging at people learning.
Yeah.
But like, even my stuff, you could be like, well, that's ridiculous. Why, like, that's, there's wrong parts, and I'm included in that.
I mean, I say it a lot, and you've heard this, is, you know, celebrate each other's goals. Everyone has different life goals. Everyone has different goals on what they're doing or why they're doing it. And so if you project your goals onto somebody else, of like, okay, so I could tell you what I would do with this podcast, which would be like, well, I'd make an hour, and I would allow more philosophical talks, and I would actually put you on this side so you're facing screen, right? All those things, but that's not your goal. Your goal is to have like shorter, like on the way to work podcasts, maybe like quick inspirational, like chewable things where, you know, it's just, we're all going after different things. So the first thing is like, what is your goal? Mm. And I bet you if I asked you your goal for this whole thing, and I've heard it in different ways, and I would feel like you're hitting your goal. You are hitting what you've wanted. And so skateboarding is a good example of like, I go skateboarding and there's a rail. I'm going and I'm trying to board slide the entire rail. And I want to do it very slowly. Okay. So like, that's my goal, is to see how slowly of a board slide I could do, pretty much close to standing, and then scoot it. Like, I want to do that. Where my other friends are like saying like, well, they're saying like, you know, you got to go faster and all that stuff. And it's like, actually, my goal is to go slow.
Yeah.
And then like other people will approach the rail and they'll totally do a totally different trick. Now, if I'm saying, if I'm projecting my goal of a board slide onto them, then I'm like, you messed up the board slide. You actually landed on the trucks instead of the board. And it's like, that's not helpful, because first off, I think it's before we critique or give advice, it's best to go, what was your goal for this? What is your, so people send me scripts to get advice and stuff. It's like, what is your goal? What kind of feedback are you looking for? Are you looking for feedback or encouragement right now? Where is this in the stage of filmmaking or in the process of the thing? So I think it's just people projecting their goals onto other people. And I think that if you kind of relax from that, that's going to be better. I don't know.
So it's just, in a word, having empathy for the other person. And
yeah, they're at a different spot. Like I say this as well, if you're a five, teach a four and learn from a six. Some people aren't ready for advice right now. Some people are showing their film and they don't want to hear about microphones. They're actually trying to figure out how to light it. Mm-hmm. And if you said to me you wanted to learn how to drive, or you wanted to learn how to drive stick, and then I'm teaching you and I'm really teaching you how to do the push pull with the clutch, then I say, well, you need to work on rev matching. It's like, well, not yet. Okay, like, calm down. I think, so I've never been in a classroom. I was homeschooled my whole life, never went to college. And so I think when I have seen people teach, I think they miss the first part of teaching, in my opinion. I think the first thing you should do as a teacher is get them to love it. Hmm. That's it. If I could get you to love a certain thing, then you're good. Why are you a good juggler? Because you enjoy it. You found a joy from doing it. Were you good when you first started? No. Were you doing five clubs then? No. You were doing three at first. You probably started with balls instead of clubs. Once you loved it, you wanted to do all the other work. You wanted to try clubs, add up, add five, add nine. You wanted to do all those other things after you fell in love with it. So if I could get you to fall in love with filmmaking and then also let you see how much you learn about yourself and the world and reality around you. If I could get you to do that first, then you're going to come up to me and say, how do I get better at this? Because I'm learning so much about myself. Mm. And then I say, well, if you use this lens or if you added this mic, you'll see how much more you're communicating. Because just like with any language, which film is a language, any language, you start off with words, daddy, mommy. Then you add sentences, and then you add paragraphs, and then you start trying to figure out how to say and express your feelings inside. You don't start there with a kid. You don't go, tell me what you're feeling inside and your deepest fears. Like, it's just like, they might say like, spider, and that's it, and that's fine. You communicated to me what your fear was. After a while, you'll start realizing the more I'm better at communicating to other humans around me, the more I learn about myself and other humans around me, then I want to learn how to communicate more. I want you to tell me how I could get better at this whole thing, because the better I get, the more I fall in love with it, the more clearer I feel as a human, the more at peace I feel. And so, yeah, I have a lot of people come up to me later on asking me what they could do to get better. But until you fall in love with it, I'm not going to give you any advice.
Yeah.
I want you to love this first. So sometimes it's just playing with it. It's just like a toy,
Yeah. That's great. And I think, it's like you never need to explain that out in the context of this. Is it interesting to hear that underlying thing that you obviously very much like truly believe in that? I've talked about it a lot in like the just go principle, right, of starting.
Yes.
And you, whatever like cliche thing about climbing a mountain, and so it's funny because every culture has the journey of 1,000 miles begins with the first step, and all of the things are there, of start and then you don't need to know how to, you know, with the silly mountain thing, you don't need to know how to get to the top of the mountain.
Yeah.
But you need to prepare a little bit.
Right.
But mostly you need to start going.
Or start with a smaller mountain.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Why don't you just see, like, Stone Mountain first. And then, like, you know, Kennesaw Mountain and then Everest. Don't start with Everest right away. Like,
yeah.
I think that's the thing is people are trying, when they make their first film, they're trying to make an award-winning, Oscar-winning film for their first one they ever done. And I've seen a lot of filmmakers do this. They were like, they're prepping and they put this all this pressure on themselves to be like, I'm finally going to make a film.
Mm.
This needs to change the film world.
Yeah.
And it's like, actually, climb smaller mountains first. Like,
yeah.
I've been learning how to cook and I've been applying these ideas to it. And just going, it needs to be edible. That's it.
Yeah.
So if it's broccoli, if it's burnt, it just is going to taste bad. But like the more I'm just going like, what happens if I add this to that? It'll be edible. This is not poisonous. This is not poisonous. The combination of the two isn't poisonous. So why didn't I see what happens? And yeah. So like I just cut up potatoes and put pancake mix over them. And then air fried them. And they came out awesome. I didn't like look that up. I actually just was like, I'm curious. Why can't I have fun with it? The more I've actually started having fun with cooking and just going like, let's see what happens. This is an experiment. I'm going to test this. Same with film. You could do something. I wonder what would happen if I did this or if I tried this. I'm sure that you've done this with, you know, juggling or film where you're like, what would happen if I tried this one thing that would be if I balanced the juggling pin on my nose or chin while I was juggling? I wonder if I could do that.
Yeah.
I wonder if I could make one land on my chin. Then you just try it. And it's not about whether or not you fail. It's actually that you tried it. You have a hypothesis and then you have your experiment right after, which is fun. It makes it so fun.
Yeah. And particularly, and well, so to go, there's lots of things I could think of, but in like live theater, there's like so many moments that became core parts of my show that were kind of recreating things that were mistakes or things that didn't
right.
go well, or
yes.
like the audience yelled something and then I had to go recreate that because I was open and willing to not stick to my script of, oh, I'm doing the show and I'm supposed to do this trick next. This kid is yelling at me. I need to tell them to shut up so that I can do my trick.
Mm-hmm.
That's a choice that you can make. And some people would make that choice.
Sure.
I would always be like, wait, we're not doing tricks anymore. We're going to play with this kid.
And right, right.
It's like, they're going to have some interaction. Instead of telling them to shut up, I'm going to bring them on stage and see what happens. It's going to fail sometimes, but then sometimes it's going to be like the greatest thing ever.
Absolutely.
And I have photos of like me on stage and there's like a child and they're like doing something funny with the juggling things. The audience is laughing and it's a thing that wasn't supposed to happen.
Absolutely.
Or think about like with playing with, it's something I forget what the exact example was, but I like agreed to film something for free and I set up the whole thing. And I had this like slider that was moving and it like didn't work. And like the slider or the stands that I used were like wobbly.
Uh huh.
And like I got back and I was like, the footage is like all ruined. It's shaky. It's wobbly. And then I was like filming something that was significantly more important. Like a lot was riding on it like the next week. And I was like, if I would have said no to that free thing, I would have used those stands
right, and not known.
On the big one, and I would have like been really screwed.
Right.
And it was like that I said yes to doing the thing, and I ruined some footage, but it was for a thing that was free, and it didn't matter. But a couple weeks ago, you said at the beginning of one of your things, when you're making a film and insert whatever you, when you're making a live theater show, when you're writing your book, when you're starting your podcast, when whatever the thing is that you're doing, there's going to be a moment when you're frustrated because it's not happening how you want it to happen.
Totally.
What was the thing that you said?
Well, I talk about that a lot, so I'm not sure which one. If you're trying to feed
I'm
me
for one,
trying
to get you so, to do one. But.
So there, I have a billion examples because I actually believe in the idea of
the. I'm gonna drive you back onto it. Yeah. The only way that you could be making this film better is if.
That's it. The only way the film you just made could have been better is if you made a film before it.
Yeah.
And I totally believe that. If that one with the wobbly stands was better, or the one after that was better because you made the wobbly stand one.
Yeah.
I think for whatever you're doing, the only way it could have been better, because we always make all these excuses. I didn't have enough time. I didn't have enough money. I didn't have X, Y, Z. The only thing you didn't have, if you had more experience, if you had one other film under your belt, you would have been able to make that in a little bit less time. You would have gotten quicker at that or been able to prioritize what you really need in that amount of time better. The thing about, we're just so afraid of chaos. When actually some of the best, most magical moments in history usually comes out of chaos or unplanning or like the rug being pulled up from under people, like Jaws where the shark breaks. And Spielberg, being somebody that grew up doing a ton of films with his friends and figuring out how to make explosions with little ramps and or teeter-totters, so he'd put like a bag of flour on one end and he'd step on it and it'd make it look like an explosion. That kind of creativity sparked up as soon as that shark broke. And what he did was he didn't show the shark. He made the whole thing way scarier. And now it's taught. The formula that he discovered is now taught in film school. Don't show the monster. And every horror movie ever since has been copying that formula that he came up with out of the necessity of a low budget. Yeah. And this thing the I Have a Dream speech wasn't planned.
Hmm.
Like he planned a totally different sermon and he got up there and his friend who was in the background right before he started talking, she said, "Tell him about your dream." And he's like, I have a dream that, you know, and then rest is history. And it's like, sometimes you prepare a certain amount, but then you let the universe do what it does, where it just happens. And some of my favorite things that I've ever done were, or even the stuff that most people are like, wow, I really love that one moment.
Yeah.
That one moment was at the time the thing that scared the hell out of me. It was the thing that was like the camera broke while shooting a music video in California where I didn't have friends to like call up and I made it work. And I sometimes it rained, or one time there was a tornado warning for a music video and we all had to go in a basement. And so me and the lead singer ran outside and did 10 minutes of shooting in the, like with the tornado far enough away where you didn't see it, but like lightning and rain and stuff. And he's like, "Hey, there's water on your lens. Do you want to wipe that off?" And I'm like, "No, I love how this looks." And it was like looking really cool. And those things happened. And actually for every single music video I've ever done or short film, or even my feature film, the moments that I love the most is actually when it was chaos and then I had to fill in the gap with whatever.
Yeah.
And I think that we should be less afraid of that. In fact, I actually think it's like, go out and shoot tomorrow. The thing is you don't have to show anyone.
Hmm.
Shoot something tomorrow. Shoot a short film tomorrow. If you don't like it, don't show anyone. Quentin Tarantino's first film wasn't Reservoir Dogs. He made a feature film that nobody saw. He spent a lot of money. He took 3 years on it, and then he just didn't show anybody. You have the ability to do that. We actually we think that when we film or make a film, it's live.
Yeah.
That it, you know, like if you practice juggling in here, that it's live. It's not. You could practice juggling and try balancing a pin on your chin, and if you fail, it's not live. You're good. Even if it is live, even if you were doing a street show and you did that and you failed, you totally know how to make it fun and be like, "Hey, I'm human." And human beings are looking for what people do in failure.
Yeah.
There's something really magical about like, wow, this person isn't so perfectly articulated where they've scripted out every single thing they're going to say. You actually see like this person is in a flow of like truly what's happening. They're really present in reality. whatever they're doing, whether that's art, speaking, or dancing, or whatever, you're like, whoa. And I saw that mess up for them. I saw that light fall or that kid shout. And now I'm going, I bet you that all the audience, soon as somebody heckles a comedian, everyone's like, okay, I'm going to see what happens. This is what I'm more interested in than that whole bit that I heard on his CD or on their Netflix special. I'm not as interested. Now I'm interested. Something else is going to change, or this is now a deviation from the formula that they had in the first place. Now I'm interested.
Thank you so much for watching and listening. This concludes part one of my conversation with Isaac Dietz. Part two will be available soon. We are going to be releasing new podcast episodes every single Monday. So there'll be a combination of me interviewing people and some solo podcasts of just me reflecting on things that I talked about with my guests and a bunch of other new ideas being brewed into the system. So thank you so much for watching. Remember, you can listen on all the streaming platforms. I think Spotify's. I listen to all my podcasts these days on Spotify. I think the player is great. It's easy. I'm always kind of on Spotify anyway. If I'm listening to music, it's easy to kick over. So you can listen to all of the episodes there on Spotify or whatever other streaming platform you listen to your favorite podcasts on. We should be there. And if you don't see us there, send us an email and we'll make sure that we become there. We become there. We get on there that you can listen to us there. And if you enjoy looking at people when they're recording podcasts, you can check us out on YouTube. Just search for us and you'll find us. And that's it for now. Thank you and goodbye.